What is it like grabbing a virtual boob?
I would think that it's very not satisfying.
They call me back door Santa. I make my runs about the break of day. They call me back door Santa. I make my runs about the break of day. Oh, oh, oh. I make all the little girls happy while the boys are out to play. Look at here.
It's Saturday, December 18th, 2021.
Once a year. But look at here. I come running with my presents every time you call me dear. Look at here. I keep some change in my...
It's episode 070. If you're keeping score, you are about to go down the rabbit hole with Joe and Brian. I'm Brian, with me, as always, from parts unknown, my good friend Joe. Joe, how you doing?
I'm one. Yourself?
I'm doing pretty good.
Very good. Very good.
Not as good as you, I don't think, but I'm doing pretty good, man.
I don't know. You're Mr. Newman, so you know, that's always an open question.
For listeners who didn't listen to the end of last week's show, enlighten us. Tell us, where are you right now?
I am in the Bahamas.
Yeah.
It's great. This is awesome. This place is beautiful. Everything about it.
Yeah. I've seen the YouTube videos, man. I love it. Do you have a... Are you able to go down to the water and see, like, pigs and stuff swimming around in the ocean and stuff?
The way you make it sound is if, like, you know, you just go to the ocean, which is just full of pigs.
That's what it looks like on the YouTube videos, man. These
like
pigs,
the pigs over here.
Pigs just swimming around, and people are like throwing food at them and stuff.
Close.
Okay.
My current location, I'm about a mile, a little less than a mile from the beach. Okay. I walked there this morning. And got splashed. I mean, have you ever been next to the ocean?
Not really, I guess.
Yeah. The ocean is some powerful stuff.
Yeah. One time when I was going to Florida, I went to the Carolinas and I drove down the coast and stopped off at a couple places where I seen and watch some surfers out there. But I mean, I was still probably a good 30 some yards from the actual water. So that's about as close as I've gotten.
Yeah. The ocean is one of those things where if you're really just right up on it, you get a real quick sense of, like, yeah, this is really powerful stuff. And, you know, humans, we've achieved a few things, but we have nothing on Mother Nature. We are here at her convenience.
I like that. That's great. I don't really have much to report on my end. It's been a week pretty much full of rain, drizzle,
rain,
storms.
Terrible. Awful.
Yeah, it stormed all a lot. It probably stormed more last night than it did last Friday night. The only thing, I don't think we had the tornadoes, but yeah, it stormed. I listened to it storm all night.
What is it with down to me, like, last week was weird because you're not supposed to get tornadoes in December.
True. Yeah, it was crazy, man. Where are we at?
Motherfucker. Give me two fingers of Southern Comfort.
What did the Bohemian bartender bring you tonight, Joe?
Well, typically, Yeah, nice touch there.
Thank you.
Typically, I support the Bahamian rum industry by having a Bahamian rum, but this time the bartender brought me some Bahamian beer.
What?
By the name of yeah.
Okay.
It's funny. It's funny because it dawned on me that I don't drink beer with anyone else except for you.
Oh, crazy.
I don't even, yeah. So I got a I've got three beers.
Okay.
One lager, which is now expired.
Mm-hmm.
One mango flavored beer and one guava flavored beer.
Okay.
Delicious. That's the word I would use for them.
Is it okay? So is it? Would you say are they like the equivalent of like a local craft brewery beer that we would have here in the States, or is it a is it like a nation like a popular beer that's I don't know.
It's like the national brand. So like America has Budweiser.
Okay.
The Bahamas has Kalik.
I got you.
And I understand that, what's it called? Craft beer.
Mm-hmm.
Is that like another word for like hop central, very hoppy beer?
They tend to overdo it.
Hmm. Yeah, they didn't do that here. This stuff's really good. I have to figure out a way to get you some of this stuff sometime.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Now, when you went to El Mexico, you brought back some authentic tequila. Are you going to be able to bring back some like authentic rum from there?
Yes, I will. And in fact, I packed accordingly. I that was part of my packing strategy, so I can maximize the amount of booze I can bring back to the States.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Why'd you only pack half a bag, Joe? Oh, you'll see.
Yeah, you'll see. You will see.
I'm just drinking this. So I'm drinking some Blue Moon Light Sky is what it's called. And it's kind of like Blue Moon's their take on a low carb light beer.
Now, because it's Blue Moon, yeah. I'm likely to give it the benefit of every doubt because that's a good beer.
Yeah.
But you said light, and that's usually a problem.
Yeah, I didn't. First of all, I didn't buy it for the lightness. I ordered Blue Moon proper, but this was a backup beer, and so I guess they were out, and so this is what they brought me. I'm looking here, and it's 3.6 carbs, which is respectable, I suppose. 95 calories. So those are about the numbers that most of your light beers or low carb beers have nowadays. So I got to say it is probably the most flavorful. Like this would probably be my number one choice as far as low carb light beers go. It's respectable. 4% alcohol, so it's okay.
Right, so if you were trapped on some deserted island and they're like, yeah, no beer or light beer, mm-hmm. you'd say light beer, and you'd say this beer.
Ooh, well, you know what? I don't know about the carb counts, but if we're just going to go with straight light beer, Heineken Light is pretty fucking good too. But I don't know whether they shoot for, if they're worried so much about carbs as they are calories, but yeah, either way, one or the other, can't go wrong, I guess, if those were my choices. So let's jump into the show here. So I found it, so you sent me another article we're going to touch on here. Actually, it's our first real article that we hit on is about Jeffrey Epstein, and that reminded me. There's the Ghislaine Maxwell trial is going on. I thought it's odd that I hadn't heard anything about it. Like this entire week, none of my news, nothing. I figured surely if she was acquitted or convicted, I'd hear about it. I hadn't heard anything. So I did a search before the show, and I found this article. I didn't link to the article or anything. I just grabbed like the first sentence out of it. It's all we really need. Ghislaine Maxwell. This is the article's title. Ghislaine Maxwell, sex trafficking child delayed after lawyer becomes ill. And it says jurors were poised to hear from a fourth woman who says she was abused by Jeffrey Epstein, but the proceedings were abruptly adjourned after a lawyer needed medical attention. And that's all I have. They didn't elaborate. So make of that what you will.
Yeah, I'd be like, because this case is so high profile, I'm surprised they did not have a reporter interviewing the lawyer's doctor. You know?
Yeah, man. I mean, with all the crazy shit that has surrounded all of this, yeah, you can't help. I mean, maybe the lawyer just had some bad sushi and it caught up with him, you know, but your mind just can't help but go to like, you know,
other places.
Yeah, the can't help but go down the rabbit hole, so to speak, or at least circle around. Well,
and the crazy thing is that with this high profile of case and the fact that she comes from not just old money, but old money, you know, she's got she probably had like the equivalent of the pedophile dream team as her. As her defense counsel, so she has more than just one lawyer. So, makes it.
No, you're right, and that article I didn't include it in the show notes, but the article did mention that, and for whatever reason, the lawyer or the, not the lawyer, the judge said that this they needed this particular lawyer for the cross exam. So, I don't know, man.
Mm.
Interestingly,
well, I would imagine.
No, go ahead.
I would imagine that, like, you know, for such a high-profile case, and she probably has so much money to spend for her defense to make sure she doesn't, like, spend time in jail. She probably has, like, lawyers specialized in, you know, in every section of the case. Hmm. But, yeah.
You know,
quick question. Do you know if she's being held in custody while this is happening?
Oh, I'm sure she. Oh, yeah, I'm sure she is. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. I mean, if I were rich like her, I wouldn't, you know, stay put for this trial.
Do you remember when after Epstein hung himself?
Yeah.
And then they decided they was going to start turning a focus on her. You remember how she was like jet setting all over the world there for, you know, there was you'd see the occasional article of like with photos of her like out in front of some bistro in France or whatever, and then they ended up finding her, I guess back somewhere like in the Hamptons or something in some, I don't know, man. It's like, I'm sure she's, my whole point is I think she's definitely a flight risk.
Yeah. She's a flight risk if there ever was one.
Yeah.
So,
and hey, when I was looking her up, and then I looked up the lawyer I was looking up the judge and then the lawyer. Do you know who the prosecuting attorney is?
I believe, isn't it like Comey's daughter?
Yes. Okay. I mean, it is what it is, man.
What?
I don't know, man. I just. It's just fucking incestuous. The entire system, man.
It's funny you should say that because about two and a half weeks ago, I came across a story that pointed that out. Like, you know, this thing is one of those. This is one of those cases where you're like, okay, like on one hand, when somebody tells us that there is a worldwide pedophile ring run by the world's richest and most elite, most powerful people, the very first, my very first thought is like, yeah, right. Mm-hmm. But then you have this case, and then you have Jeffrey Epstein, who pretty much ran what seemed to be a worldwide pedophile.
Sorry.
And huh?
I said sorry, but that was, I had to laugh. It was funny, man. But yeah.
Well, yeah, and so you were saying?
No, go ahead, man. I like where you're going.
So yeah, all this stuff where your very first knee jerk reaction when you hear about it is like, yeah, that's got to be some type of nut job, tinfoil hat wearing, conspiracy theorist. Mm. But then you have this case, and you're like, okay, all this stuff is probably this is a worldwide pedophile ring, and it kind of makes you think of George Carlin. How he used to always say that, it's just one big club and you ain't in it.
Yep.
And so, and the article I saw about this basically, pointed this out, said, wait a second, what are the chances that, there aren't any other attorneys that could have been used to prosecute this case? They had to choose, Comey's daughter.
Yeah.
Of all, in New York City, there weren't any other prosecuting attorneys. And in fact, they made reference to some other really, really, really high profile case that she was also involved in. And so I think that's just further proof that, yes, it's a large club, or maybe it's a small club, but we're just not in it.
Yeah. That's I'm glad you brought that article up, man. That's interesting. And it's crazy.
I think I sent that to you about 2 or 3 weeks ago, but it didn't make the show cut.
Oh.
It didn't make the show.
Okay. I came across this last minute. I just seen this, and there's no real reason to dig into it, I don't think, but I found it interesting. Nicholas Sandman, if anyone remembers him, he was the kid from Covington, Kentucky, just a stone's throw. A stone's throw from me.
Quick question.
Yeah.
I don't see that on the show.
You don't see it underneath the. Maybe do a refresh. This was. I added this at last minute. I don't know. Maybe you didn't have it. Maybe you had this open before I updated it.
Yeah, so it doesn't pop up. My next show is. But let's go with it.
Well, it's just real quick. He settled with NBC. You know what? I probably didn't upload it. I'm sorry, Joe. Here, he settled with NBC. This is his third $200 million lawsuit settlement that he's had in the past year. And so that kid's doing all right, man.
Hey, yeah, I wish I could find me some Indians to get up in my face.
No doubt.
Yeah. And I would I would make a show of it. His third $200 million settlement.
Yeah, people need to. And I know you're not going to like to hear this, but I can easily see this kind of fortune coming to Kyle Rittenhouse in the next year or so, man. Because his name was slandered and dragged through the mud just as much, if not worse, than Sandman. So we'll see. I mean, like it or not, it's probably going to happen.
If you can take and this is my rule writ large. If you can take an instance in your life and turn that around to a $100 million, $200 million payout, I may not like you, and I may not like it, but hell, you deserve it, because you probably went through it to get it, and you probably can't walk the streets like a normal person could. So, by the time these guys are our age, they'll be able to walk the street again. But especially Rittenhouse, he's gonna have to, he's not gonna be able to walk the streets anymore. So
well put. Okay. That's a good take. That's a good take. So we was talking about Maxwell. this is a, you know what, just, does this story in itself remind you of anything else that we may have talked about recently?
Which one, the Maxwell story?
No, your Jeffrey Epstein here. I'm sorry, let me read the title here. Jeffrey Epstein spent the weeks before his suicide telling jail officials he had no plans to kill himself, the report says.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that essentially, it almost sounds like the McAfee, John McAfee.
McAfee kill himself?
Well, that's what they told us.
Oh, crap. You're right. He did.
But he even had like a tattoo on his arm. It was like, I did not kill myself. And, and people had talked about, you know, how he was, you know, yeah, he was kind of like confined, but he was okay. He was doing all right. He was enjoying himself. That's what this report reminds me of.
Well, yeah, I mean, they spent that story, the McAfee story, they spent that like, oh, you know, they're never going to take me alive. I don't want to go back to the States.
Yeah. So this article here, it's just the bullet points here says Jeffrey Epstein attempted to kill himself in 2019. In August that year, he did kill himself. Okay. The New York Times obtained documents showing.
Wait. That's how you know this story is propaganda.
Yeah. For sure. The New York Times obtained documents showing that he told jail officials he was happy and wouldn't kill himself. That just is weird. I mean, that just seems like a weird thing that you would say.
Yeah.
But I mean, I guess if maybe he had tried to, and maybe he was on suicide watch. I don't know. But and he also told his jail psychologist. Yeah, he also told his jail psychologist, that he had no interest in killing himself. So, I don't know. Go ahead.
Let me read a little bit more. The Times report was based on more than 2,000 pages of reports it obtained by suing the Federal Bureau of Prisons after it tried to deny a request from them under the Freedom of Information Act. The document said that Epstein spent time after an attempted suicide in July 2019, saying that he was happy and wouldn't try it again. Epstein was placed on suicide watch after that attempt, but said that he had a wonderful life and that he wouldn't consider killing himself, he said, the Times said. He told the jail psychologist, according to documents, I have no interest in killing myself. Wow. Well, I guess, of course he didn't have any interest in killing himself. He was, you know, I would imagine that pedophiles are kind of like vampires. They kind of get juiced off kids, but, you know, plenty of people have interest in killing pedophiles.
Yeah. And, you know, at first you're like, of course he would think about it. He's facing life in prison. But then again, if he has the kind of dirt on important, powerful people like we assume that he does, he probably was not expecting to spend the rest of his life in prison. He was going to get out somehow, he thought.
Well, and he had very good reason to believe that, because he beat a case like 20 years prior.
Right. Yeah.
Like, yeah, in our previous story, we talked about how, like, what Miami police did, or some police did an investigation and turned over like a list of almost 30 women, 30 girls to the FBI, and the only thing he got was like soliciting prostitution, and then spent a year in house arrest.
Yeah.
And the story, they said that, you know, that could only have happened if it came from the president or the attorney general himself. And so, yeah, he probably never expected to see as much jail time as he did. But
yep. Crazy times, man. So This is no surprise. China is going to be focusing heavily on a lot of our shows coming in the foreseeable future, I think. And you brought an interesting story, and we actually have a clip for it. Let me see here. Yeah, this is like almost 5 minutes, so we may or may not make it. Although I watched it earlier, and the entire thing is interesting. So we'll kick it off, and if you want me to stop, and if you want to comment on anything, just let me know.
Would it?
Coming back to Pakistan, though, here's a question that Islamabad will never answer. What is happening in Xinjiang? What's happening to the Uyghur Muslims or to Muslims in general in China? Imran Khan feigns absolute ignorance every time someone asks him this question. Same with most Islamic leaders, not a squeak from them. They've all chosen China's goods over China's Muslims. They've left the genocide of Xinjiang for others to deal with. And the United States, for all its flaws and mistakes, which we're the first ones to highlight, as you just saw, is constantly at it. Call it compulsion, call it compunction. Whatever be the reason, the U.S. is pushing China on the Xinjiang genocide. It is calling out China for its persecution of Uyghur Muslims. The U.S. may have ulterior motives, but it doesn't change the fact that some of its actions are extremely significant. Tonight, we want to talk about the latest one. Washington has approved a legislation to punish China for oppressing Uyghurs. How will they do this? By rejecting goods that are produced with forced labor, the forced labor of Uyghurs in Xinjiang. So the U.S. has passed this law. It's called the Uyghur Forced Labor Prevention Act. It was passed in the House, the U.S. House of Representatives. And look at the kind of support it got. An overwhelming majority, 428-1, 428 representatives in favor, one against.
I tried as much as I could. I could not find out who that one person was.
I did.
Who was it? Who?
He was a guy from Kentucky.
Oh, of course. Don't tell me. Don't say it's Rand.
No, it's not Rand Paul. Rand's a senator.
Oh, okay.
It's Thomas Massey.
Thomas Massey.
Yep.
Okay, fine. Thank you.
Yeah, in fact, just to let you know, Down the Rabbit Hole podcast Action Team 5 actually called Thomas Massey's office and got a comment.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yo, like, yeah, I just want to know, like, you know, why he voted for it. Like, it's like he's the only person in all of Congress that didn't realize that was a bad idea.
Yeah, for sure, man.
And the aide told me that he just believes that when you do sanctions like that, it only hurts the people for whom, it only hurts the people at the very bottom, which is the slave. And I wasn't going to argue with her because she's just an aide, but yeah, it didn't make any sense at all to me.
Yeah.
So his solution was to continue punishing the Chinese government for using slave labor by continuing to buy the products.
I guess
that's the same rationale that Dick Cheney used when he voted to support the South African regime.
I can't speak to that. What comes to mind, I guess, is, you know, you hear about child labor,
mm-hmm.
In other countries, and yeah, it's horrible. But then again, you're applying that to, and I know how fucked up this sounds coming, how this is going to even sound, but you're applying that. Something in some third world country you're trying to apply our first world ideals to. And yeah, child labor sucks in a third world country maybe, but if that's the only money that is coming for a family, and then you just take that away, I get it, I guess, but I think this is a different situation for sure.
Yeah, it's a different situation, totally different situation. I can't even speak to it. Out of all, 435 members of Congress, one guy from Kentucky didn't get the message.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway.
Here we go. Let's play this out.
And this is probably one of those rare occasions when both Republicans and Democrats have spoken in one voice. It shows how the United States can be united when it comes to matters of national interest. So what does the bill say? Number one, it will bar imports of Chinese goods that are proven to be produced through forced labor. Number two, it will ensure that American enterprises are not funding that forced labor. Number three, it will require all firms to disclose details of any new deals that have something to do with Xinjiang. And number four, this bill could lead to sanctions on any foreign entity that deals in forced labor. If this bill gets passed in the Senate too, it could spell trouble for a lot of companies, a lot of mainstream brands that have proven to be benefiting from forced labor. Do you know which brands are these? Look at this report. It was published in March 2020 by the Australian Strategic Policy Institute. This was on the use of forced labor in Xinjiang. A total of 83 global companies and brands were implicated in this report. They were either directly or indirectly benefiting from abusive labor programs. 1 year on, some of these brands have shifted their base from Xinjiang, but most haven't. Here are their names. We'll start with the fashion brands: Versace, Louis Vuitton, Dior, Jimmy Choo, Gucci, Balenciaga, Fila, Hugo Boss, Timberland, Zara, Victoria's Secret, Lacoste, Skechers, Tommy Hilfiger, Sephora. Virtually the entire fashion industry is benefiting from forced labor. What about the technology sector? There's Acer, Asus, Dell, HP, Lenovo, Microsoft, Oppo, among others. In the auto sector, we have BMW, General Motors, Jaguar, Land Rover, Volkswagen. And finally, the retailers: Walmart, Kohl's, Tesco, Marshalls, Walt Disney. Any dollar that goes to these brands inevitably goes to factories profiting off Uyghur labor. Factories that subject Uyghurs to unimaginable horrors. According to one estimate, there are at least 80,000 Uyghurs who have been relocated from Xinjiang and assigned to factories involved in a range of supply chains. 27 such factories have been identified so far. They're spread across 9 Chinese provinces. These factories deal in everything: electronics, textiles, automotives, you name it, and Uyghur labor is behind it. The ones who stay behind in Xinjiang are assigned to cotton fields. They're paid. Some of them are paid 15 cents a day to pick cotton. Some are not paid at all. The cotton they pick is then exported around the world. In case you did not know this, Chinese cotton production accounts for 20% of the global supply. And do you know how much of this cotton comes from Xinjiang? 85%. Now, if you're watching this from Europe or America, there's a fat chance that you have at least one piece of clothing that was made through forced labor of Uyghur Muslims in China. So America's decision to stop imports of goods from Xinjiang is a step in the right direction, although we're not sure about the implementation. You see, similar laws have been passed in the past. They haven't changed very much. Here's hoping this one is different.
Yeah. You know, this reminds me, I'm not hopeful. I'm not super hopeful about this. Maybe things will be different, but shit, man, I remember back in the 80s there was the big push to buy American, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't recall if that was maybe more aimed at Japan than China, but
Japanese manufacturers were eating Americans' lunch and pretty much every thing they competed in this with.
Yeah, I don't know, man. What do you think? Do you Do you hold out much hope?
I think this time is a little bit different because, you know, yes, they said that things like this have been passed in the past. Mm. But the difference is that right now, you know, we're in the process of decoupling the U.S. and the Chinese economies. And so I think they're much more likely to follow through with it because I think it now touches on American national security, I guess. Maybe not.
I hope so. I mean,
maybe not.
I hope so. Although I don't know, I still don't feel good about the overall plight of the Uyghurs in China. But
yeah, me neither. Yeah. But I think the thing that was crazy in that statement was that China accounts for 20% of the world's cotton.
Yep, and in that area of China is 85% of that 20%.
Yeah. So, it's like most of our clothes probably have like were made by like people who were enslaved or being oppressed, and so.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yep. Anything else on that?
Fingers crossed. I hope that the government follows through and really does ban that stuff. And I also hope that the companies who knowingly profit from that stuff, I hope they all suffer greatly. There's something especially odious about profiting from, you know, mass suffering. And it's one of those things where you're like, yeah, you know what? You know, capitalism is a good thing, I guess, but when you have people who take it too far, who are like, yeah, we need to profit, even if we're doing things that are, you know, just really, really bad.
Unfortunately, for this to have any teeth, it's going to require that these people's feet be held to the fire, and that would typically be the news media responsibility. But as I've pointed out time and again, they fail us constantly. So I don't feel good about this. I hope that every week we get a bunch of stories about this, but I'm not hopeful. This just the fact that you got this story off of this WION network, not an American network. I wonder if people who just watch our local American news even knows about this.
Not at all. Not at all. And like, I mean, your point about the American media failing us. Let's be clear why that is, especially in this case. It's not that they're failing us because they're grossly incompetent. Well, that's not the only reason. The other more important reason is that they're often in the pockets of all these people. So, yeah, all those companies that they rattled off, everything from, you know, all the luxury brands into the tech brands, those are the folks who buy, like, ads, right?
Yep.
And that support the media. Mm-hmm. So they're not likely, you know, in that huge of a hurry to shoot themselves in the foot and piss off their biggest funders. And so,
Exactly. Follow the money.
Yeah, the money.
So six FBI agents accused of soliciting prostitution, trafficking drugs while on overseas assignments. Six FBI.
Were they trafficking drugs while soliciting the prostitutes, or were these separate activities?
I don't know.
These guys may have been in a hurry, you know.
Six FBI agents have been accused of criminal activities related to overseas assignments, including drug trafficking, soliciting prostitutes, and failure to report interactions on behalf of foreign nationals. The allegations come from the Department of Justice Office of the Inspector General, which released a report on Tuesday accusing four agents of directly engaging in prostitution while they were on official business in another country and subsequently lying about it. A fifth agent is also accused of having solicited commercial sex overseas, while a sixth is accused of having knowledge of this misconduct but failing to report it. One of the agents in question is additionally accused of giving another agent a package containing approximately 100 white pills with instructions to deliver them to a foreign law enforcement officer.
Damn.
Over the course of the Inspector General's investigation, two of the agents in question resigned, another two retired, and one was removed from their position. The report says that during the investigation, four of the accused agents lacked candor about their interactions with prostitutes and other misconduct during OIG-compelled interviews and compelled polygraph examinations. At least one of them made false statements in an OIG-compelled interview and compelled polygraph examination, which is a violation of federal law, when the official denied having engaged in sex acts with a prostitute. The Inspector General's report has since been referred to the FBI in order to assure that appropriate action is taken. So, I don't know. I don't even know. I threw this in here just because it was just our law enforcement, we got issues. I mean, all countries do, I know, but I don't think that this is a isolated incident. I'm pretty sure that this kind of shit runs rampant through all of the agencies, and this is just one that got exposed for some whatever reason.
It's funny because the Inspector General must have been very busy this week because another report dropped on CIA about how there are a lot of CIA officers who were diddling kids.
Yeah.
Overseas.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why they didn't and this is the other thing, the thing that's interesting about that last story is that it just said it was being referred to FBI, didn't say anything about them being prosecuted or, you know, any jail time. But hey, you know what, you deal drugs and get prostitutes while worrying being an American official abroad. I guess the other thing is that, you're right. This stuff probably is, you know, runs through our system, but it's probably worse for us because we don't go. I mean, we go around, basically trying to be the example for the rest of the world. So, this stuff, needs to be called out. I hope these guys lose their retirement and get jail time.
Yes, but I suspect that we'll never hear from them again.
No. Especially the ones that have already retired. They probably took their retirement and went off to some non-extradition country and are chilling.
Yeah. Hell, they may be staying next door to you, man, down there in the Bahamas.
But the Bahamas is so close, they need to go a little bit further because the Bahamian government and if the U.S. government was like, yeah, we want this guy and this guy in cuffs and sent back to the States, the Bahamian government was like, yes, sir.
Yeah, that's a good point.
They need to go to a place like Kenya.
So this next story here that you threw in the mix, I mean, just talking about this could have got you kicked off of Facebook or YouTube. Maybe this time last year, I'm not sure, but maybe it still is.
And it'll still get you flagged today. Get flagged for this.
Wonderful. Reasonable to hypothesize COVID virus is genetically engineered.
Mm-hmm.
I have a clip, an interview of the doctor that they're talking about here. We can listen to that, or we can read through this.
Let's hear it from the horse's mouth first.
Yeah. And she is Chinese, so I think they kind of cut this clip up a little bit, so I apologize if it we'll go over the story after this if this is hard to follow, but let's check it out.
I think the lab origin is more likely than the natural origin at this point. We all agree that there was a critical event at the Huanan Seafood Market that was a super spreader event caused by humans. There's no evidence pointing to a natural animal origin of the virus at that market. But before I get into that, I'd like to point, if I can speak to that. So we've heard from many top virologists that a genetically engineered origin of this virus is reasonable. So they say that it's worth investigating. And this includes virologists who have themselves made similar genetic modifications in the first SARS virus. So we know now that this virus has a very unique feature called the furin cleavage site that makes it the pandemic pathogen it is. So without this feature, there's no way this virus would be causing this pandemic. And only recently, in September, did a proposal get leaked showing that scientists in the US from the Equal Health Alliance were in collaboration with the Wuhan Institute of Virology, developing this pipeline for inserting novel furin cleavage sites, these genetic modifications, into novel SARS-like viruses in the lab. So what we have right now, and an analogy I use, is that you found these scientists who said in early 2018, I'm going to put horns on horses, and at the end of 2019, a unicorn shows up in their city. So it really is a striking coincidence that needs to be investigated. I'd say the burden is on scientists to show that their work did not result in the creation of SARS-CoV-2.
That was, I like that.
That was really witty.
Yeah. So, kind of hard to follow, but not too bad.
Yeah, I think that whole horns on horses and you come up with unicorns made it, you know, was worth it.
Yeah, for sure. we had to get to that, but
I'll do a little reading. Dr. Elena Chan, a specialist in gene therapy and cell engineering at MIT and Harvard, made the claims when giving evidence to UK Parliament's Science and Technology Select Committee. There is a possibility that the COVID-19 virus is most likely leaked from a lab in China, British MPs were informed on Thursday. Harvard scientist Dr. Elena Chan, while testifying before the House of Commons Science and Technology Committee, said that it was reasonable to hypothesize and investigate whether the COVID virus was modified in a lab. The first cases were linked to seafood. Yeah, I didn't hear it was seafood at first. Seafood market in Wuhan, which is located across the Yangtze River, where a viral lab is located. When asked by a panel about the probability of a lab leak as the origin of the pandemic, Chan said a lab origin is more likely than natural origin at this point. We all agree that there was some critical event at the Hunan seafood market that was a super spreader event caused by humans. There is no evidence pointing to a natural animal origin of the virus at that market, she noted.
Well, you know, we've talked about this. I mean, all the way back to when Trump, you know, hammered it home every time he gave a speech. But does this matter, I guess? What?
Yes.
How does this matter?
Because, I mean, if it was a natural event, it was a natural event. If it was, engineered by humans, this could be, an act of war. And I don't know if you read my little note on the after I sent this story, but I'm convinced, and you can't convince me otherwise, that this was a bio attack. Mm-hmm. I don't believe that it was, it was spread from some market in China and then ran around the world. I believe it was an attack. But and I think like what 80 years, there'll be some government leak from China. Maybe 25 years, there'll be a government leak from our government stating how we had a pretty good idea of where this came from, but the powers that be at the time decided that, let's go with this, natural virus because, we don't want to deal with a much larger problem.
There you have it, folks. There you have it. That's a great answer. Yeah. I agree with you. I think this was intentional. Yeah. I think in all this points too, and I think we have a story later on in the show. I mean, we're all eventually going to have a come to Jesus moment with China, eventually. And I mean, everything points to it, man. I mean, you can't keep looking the other way. We're getting serious about the human rights right now, maybe, but that's just the tip of the iceberg, man.
Yeah, I don't think. I really want to believe that, yes, we're serious about human rights because we care about humans. There's too much in our history to suggest that's not the case.
Okay.
Huh?
No, okay.
No, I'm just like, you know, just you know, the wars we waged just recently. I think the human rights issue is almost like a card we play when we want to throw dirt on somebody else. Hmm. It's a pretty effective card to play because, you know, I mean, they're not calling out things that are not the case. They're calling out very serious things. But, I don't believe that. You know, we just looked up and we're like, yes, we care about the people. No, I don't think that was in our program.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Fake Tattoo Inventor.
Mr. Fake Tattoo Inventor.
Through the miracle of hypoallergenic adhesives, you transform us from mild-mannered accountant into roadhouse biker hooligan.
Hooligan.
Be it screaming skull or thrashing tiger, you've got a temporary alter ego for any occasion.
Flaming dragons.
What else says, I love you, Mom, like a heart with a sword through it?
You know I love you, Mama.
So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light, Mr. Fake Tattoo Inventor Guy. We may not have been born to ride, but thanks to you, we can feel like it.
Thank you, Mr. Fake Tattoo Inventor.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
What he did and how he abused the office and how he mistreated people, starting, you know, with the Muslim ban through the outrageous behavior in trying to overturn the election and encouraging an attack on our Capitol. And sadly, the Republican Party has gone along with him. Honestly, they have hung their spines up on the wall as they walk into their offices. They have no conscience, they have no spine. And we are seeing the results of a party that has been taken over by a demagogue. It's a time to decide whether we're going to be a grown-up country or not. Are we going to give in to all these lies and this disinformation and this organized effort to undermine our rule of law and our institutions? Or are we going to stand up to it? A betting person right now, I say Trump is going to run again. I mean, he seems to be setting himself up to do that. And if he's not held accountable, then he gets to do it again. I think that could be the end of our democracy. Not to be too, you know, pointed about it, but I want people to understand that this is a make or break point. If he were, or someone of his ilk, were once again to be elected president, and if especially he had a Congress that would do his bidding, you will not recognize our country.
One more question on that, on the polls, because there have been some recent polls that show that quite a few Americans have some questions about the president's current mental fitness. As somebody who spends, I can see you shaking your head.
Yes.
So what's your response to that?
I think that's ridiculous.
I thought it was great to see you there, and I thought, we gave you a standing ovation because I go, here he is, he's bringing class back. He's a classy guy, and you're bringing class back to the office, and I thought it was amazing that you did that.
Maybe it's another refill at your favorite diner. or waiting for the 712 bus, or Sunday afternoon in the produce aisle. These moments may not seem remarkable, but at Pfizer, protecting the regular routine in every day drives us to reach for exceptional. Working to impact hundreds of millions of lives, young and old, it's what we call the pursuit of normal. It starts with little things,
whoa. I try to discover a little something to make me sweeter. Oh, baby, refrain from breaking my heart.
What I've learned rescuing my daughter from her transgender fantasy. This is a weird story. This is a long story. I'm obviously not going to read it all, but I found this fascinating because in my sphere of family and friends, I can hear what they're talking about and point to examples of it in my real life. It's definitely bizarre.
Wait. You got stories of gender dysphoria in your real life?
I'm not going to talk about it.
But, oh, okay. We just learned something new.
It's not in my direct life, but it's people that I know. Not going to talk about it.
Sure.
But this is this is skullduggerous in itself. Let me read this, and I'd urge anyone out there who finds this even somewhat interesting to go. I think I put the entire PDF of this story at joehigh.com. I'd urge you to just read it in its entirety, but I'm going to read maybe about a third of it. My daughter's story is no longer novel. Stories like it are occurring in your state, your town, and perhaps even your own street. Gender dysphoria, the incongruence between the mind and the body, moves stealthily and quickly to invade girls and boys alike. But this isn't a cautionary tale, it's a warning. My daughter was an ultra-feminine girl since birth. She insisted that her room be painted pink, and she refused to wear anything but dresses until third grade. She avoided her older brother's toys and sports, choosing tea sets and Shopkins, a series of tiny collectible toys. Her favorite activity was to slip into my closet and don a few sparkly clothes and shiniest of heels. She rejected sports in favor of art and sewing. That all abruptly changed when she turned 12. As her body matured into young womanhood, she stopped begging for a bikini and avoided any clothing that accentuated her figure. She hid her breasts under men's extra-large sweatshirts. I remember doing similar things as my body changed, so I didn't worry at first. Then, my daughter immersed herself in anime art and cosplay, the hobby of dressing like fantastical characters. I supported her creative side. I didn't know that anime and cosplaying can overwhelm a young mind. I didn't know that anime and cosplaying involved gender-bending themes, and that the community crosses into pedophilic and sexual themes. I also didn't know that the older cosplay community groomed the younger cohorts. During that same time period, my daughter went through Teen Talk, a Manitoba, Canada-based program that says it provides youth with accurate, non-judgmental information on sexuality, reproductive health, body image, substance use awareness, mental health issues of diversity, and anti-violence issues at her public school. She came home with a whole new language. She and all her girlfriends discussed their labels: polyamorous, lesbian, pansexual. None of the five girls chose basic, their term for a straight girl. Now I was worried. So that I'm gonna stop there. The entire article, if you're interested in this, is interesting, but they go in to talk about how they talk about, you know, TikTok and just how technology and society in general is almost targeting our young girls to I don't know. I mean, we wonder how we end up with men swimmers who say that they're women and go and seem to be okay with that and dominate a certain sport or whatever. But I don't know, man. It's almost like we have a factory that makes people like that. And this woman, she got overly involved in her daughter's life, and according to her, was able to. She brought her back, but you know, she really got involved in her daughter's life, and you know, a lot of parents, I don't think are going to do that, and Yeah, I don't really have much comment on this, really. I just wanted to raise the issue, and you know, if anyone listening is interested, I'd urge you to go read the article. So that's all I really have to say about that.
I never knew that there was that was an element of the anime community.
Yeah, well, anime and manga and all that is hypersexualized, and you know.
Well, manga is basically like Japanese porn in comic book form, right?
It's not necessarily porn. It's manga is just like a comic. It's like sequential art storytelling, which is very popular in Japan. But there is a section of it that is pornographic, and I mean, you know, as far as anime goes, I mean, look at, you know, I'm not a big aficionado of anime, but I mean, look at like Sailor Moon. I mean, sexualized little girls dressed in like Catholic uniforms or whatever, you know. It's like there's definitely a theme, and there's definitely a hyper-sexualized theme that runs through it all, that really targets young women. So, like I said, may not appeal to everyone, but it's an interesting article, and yeah, check it out if you're interested.
Yeah, I'm interested. Like, you know, what are some of the things you learned? I'd be interested. Like, you know, one, two. I mean, I guess I just learned something that I didn't. I always knew that anime kind of had, like, you know, hypersexualized images of young women, but I always just thought that was just a part of Japanese culture, that they just like them young, so to speak, criminally young. I can't remember what the age of consent in Japan is, but I know it's like what.
Well, but keep in mind that this is America's, this has an American slant on it, right?
Yeah.
It may not be pure Japanese anime or manga, but and it's not even necessarily that. It's the culture surround. It's the American, or I don't know. I'm going to say American, but it's the culture that surrounds it. That I think is the dangerous part, not the anime itself, but the culture that surrounds it. Yeah. So from that cheery subject, let's talk about Russia and China teaming up to take over the world.
It just keeps on getting better and better.
I know, right? I think we're going to have to put this Indian chick on the Joe and Brian show, or the Brian and Joe show payroll, because she's giving us a lot of content.
You know what? They never ever actually say her name.
Yeah, I don't know. I wonder. And even like when I was putting these clips together, I was like, does she write this? Is this her original thoughts, or is she just repeating? Because she kind of, it's like she's definitely like reading something, but it sounds like maybe it's her own thoughts. I don't know, but
I get the feeling that it's written for her, and then she puts her own little flair to it.
I like it.
Yeah.
All right, let's check this out.
Let's shift to America's rivals now, Russia and China. What are they up to? There's a flurry of diplomacy happening between Moscow and Beijing. Presidents Vladimir Putin and Xi Jinping met virtually today. They were waving and smiling like high school buddies. But is there more to this relationship? Is it only about taking on the US, or does the China-Russia relationship have other meaningful intentions? The chemistry is certainly there. Both Vladimir Putin and Xi Jinping know how to put on a show. You may remember their famous ice cream date, or the time Xi Jinping called the Russian president his best friend. Well, that chemistry was on full display today. Take a look.
Dear President Xi Jinping, dear friend, I am glad to see you. I am greeting you. I'm glad to have a chance to get in touch with a direct video call. This allows us to thoroughly discuss Russian-Chinese relations, full-scale partnership, and strategic interaction. Dear friend, dear President Xi Jinping, next February I expect we can finally meet in person in Beijing, as we have agreed. We will hold talks and then participate in the opening ceremony of the Winter Olympic Games. I am grateful for your invitation to attend this landmark event.
This equation was never in doubt. Both Russia and China agree on most foreign policy issues. On Iran, on Syria, on Venezuela, and on North Korea. Bilateral trade is also growing. It is expected to reach $200 billion by 2024. I know it sounds like a perfect relationship. The leaders love each other, the foreign policies align, and trade is growing. But you know what? No relationship is perfect. Both Russia and China want more. They want a military partnership. Xi Jinping pitched this proposal during the talks. He said Russia and China must jointly safeguard each other's security interests. How did Vladimir Putin respond? Well, last year he said such a prospect cannot be ruled out. And since then, things have moved in this direction. Just look at the timeline. In August, Russia and China held joint military drills. For the first time, Russian soldiers trained on Chinese soil. October, 10 Russian and Chinese warships sailed through the Sea of Japan. Again, unprecedented. November, 4 Chinese and Russian bombers flew over the East China Sea. South Korea ended up scrambling jets in response. In the same month, China and Russia also signed a roadmap for military cooperation. It runs from 2021 to 2025. So the trajectory is clear. Russian and Chinese militaries are joining hands. We're seeing more joint drills, more joint patrols. But all of this is happening in the Pacific theater. What about Europe? President Putin has deployed thousands of troops near Ukraine. What has China said about that? Well, nothing so far. If Russia is wading into the Pacific, why isn't China helping out in Europe? I can think of a few reasons. Number one, Russia has a 290-year-old Pacific fleet. It's no stranger to this region, but China has no such foothold in Europe. Reason number two, Eastern Europe is on China's wish list. It is their ticket to influencing Brussels, and most of Eastern Europe is wary of Russia's buildup. So there are gaps. Nonetheless, this alliance is bad news for the West. It's basically a two-front threat. Russian troops and artillery in Eastern Europe and Chinese warships in the Pacific. Two nuclear powers, two strong armies. What about the other side? Well, you have a reluctant France, a Britain consumed by domestic politics, a Europe divided over China, and then the United States, led by Joe Biden. Can Joe Biden spread his military so thin? Remember, he's also negotiating a nuclear deal with Iran. If that fails, this becomes a three-front threat: Europe, West Asia, and the Pacific.
So I clipped it. I clipped it there. There's one more clip that I want to play that I thought was super interesting and I wanted to make sure we got to. But do you have any initial comments on this relationship?
It's one of those things that definitely has to be watched. It's like, you know, like the bad guys unite.
I'm just going to throw this out there. I've heard a lot. I mean, I've seen this story all over the place in my news feeds, and I'm guessing you have as well.
But yeah, I first saw this story maybe. I saw a story similar to it maybe 2-3 weeks ago, and I didn't remember hearing much about it at the time. And yeah, I'm surprised to hear that you've seen a lot of it, because I haven't.
Okay.
I just hear it because I always make it a point to scan and look. And you're like, oh my God, it's like the dog is right here. Can you hear that?
Oh yeah.
maybe it's a Chinese dog.
I mean, this is at least from my news feeds. It's almost to a point where I'm almost wondering whether there's like some propaganda behind it. Like, I don't know yet. I'm just watching it, but it just seems like all of a sudden it's like China, Russia, China. You better watch out. They're coming to get you, kind of a thing.
I You remember what I said about what I, you know, about 85% of the news that we see in the West.
Yeah.
But this is not news from the West. This is news from, and that's why I typically like to get news from India, Japan, and countries like that, because, you know, they speak our language. Well, they don't speak our language, but yeah, they don't, they're not interested in selling the propaganda line.
Right.
They're not trying to sell us anything, in other words.
Well, this next clip is it's a minute and a half, but I found this last part like really, really interesting and something that I wouldn't have thought of. It's interesting. Check this out.
The fact is, Biden cannot break this new alliance, the Russia-China alliance. His sanctions will only drive them closer. So what can the West do? Perhaps play the waiting game. Beneath all of this chemistry, the Russia-China relationship is far from perfect. We are talking about two expansionist powers, two leaders with big ambitions. How long before the bickering starts? China has big plans for Central Asia, but it has always been Russia's backyard. Chinese nationalists make territorial claims in Russia's Far East. Putin will not take kindly to such assertions. You see, an alliance between equals never really works. Take NATO, for example. It works because America is far superior to the other members. It's clear who's boss. Can Russia and China forge such an alliance? They will have to make lasting commitments then, promise to defend each other, align their militaries. It depends on Vladimir Putin and Xi Jinping's ego, basically, because chances are they'll both be president for life. And until then, you can expect strong bilateral exchanges. Putin is slated to visit Beijing for the Winter Olympics. Russia is selling gas to avert China's power shortage. It's a strong relationship between two powerful countries. But that power is also their kryptonite, because where there is power, there is ambition and ego.
That's an interesting angle on it, I thought.
I think that's an observation of human of the human condition.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
yeah. You got people who want more and more and more. They don't form relationships that aren't, you know, useful to some end. And yeah, you can clearly see what the useful end is here. Trying to check the United States.
Yeah.
There was something else I wanted to say about this.
Okay.
But it's not coming to me. It'll probably come to me at 3 a.m. in the morning, at which time this won't be very useful to us anymore.
Well, it'll still be relevant next week, I'm sure, because like I've said in the past, this isn't going anywhere. We're going to be talking about this for a minute.
I remember my point now.
Oh, okay.
So, that last point about China and Russia being equals, that's now, right?
Yeah.
That's for now. Inside of the next 10 years, my 10 to 15 years, the Chinese economy is supposed to be like 3 to 4 times that of the United States.
Yes.
And so I believe that her point about us being equals, the Chinese and the Russians being equals, that's for now. And the near future, that won't be the case. China will dwarf. China already does dwarf Russia in terms of its in terms of its economy, and inside the next 10 years, there's no reason to believe that they won't dwarf Russia inside of their military as well. So, I think, you know, in the near future, they may have a better working relationship insofar as China is going to be more likely to be able to slip into that that big dog role, so to speak.
Yeah, I think we just as humans in general, we have a tendency to look and analyze things in a vacuum where nothing changes. But you're right. Things are constantly evolving, and so what's true today, the factors today may not be factors tomorrow. That's a good point to make.
Well, and the thing is, like, you know, I remember something in philosophy that you know, always stays with me, that the only thing that's guaranteed is that things will continue to change. There's no such thing as a status. I mean, things are just going to be stuck. When things are stuck, they die. So, yeah, everything changes all the time. Sorry.
No.
Everything changes, but and changing is happening. Change is happening all the time.
Yeah. So I've just about given up on, I really had high hopes that Donald Trump would do the right thing when it came to Julian Assange. And, for whatever reason, he probably planned on using him as a political football in his second term, maybe. But since that didn't happen, I'm afraid Julian Assange just, he's fucked. So,
well, hey, did you hear about Trump's, I mean, how the CIA under Trump was actually planning on killing Assange?
Yeah, I seen that.
So yeah, I mean, you think that Assange did something to personally, you know, wait a minute. Didn't WikiLeaks, didn't they help the Trump? I mean, Trump a lot.
Well, if helping Trump means that they just published documents that they were given, then I guess they did. But at the same time, did they also damage George W. Bush because they released Chelsea Manning's information about all of our abuses in Iraq? I mean, I think of WikiLeaks as a nonpartisan. They're a nonpartisan, a truly nonpartisan entity where they take information from whistleblowers and make it public. So, Trump definitely benefited, but I don't think that they actively tried to help him.
Okay, I'll give you that. Like, I can understand that. If, you know, was it like a bull in a China shop goes in? If you let a bull loose in a music shop, and it destroys all the classical and the gospel music. And it comes out, that's not to say that the bull helped you because you like rap music. The bull doesn't like rap music. It just was destroying stuff. And it just so happened to miss the stuff that you like.
Yeah. I mean, during the Iraq war, when that video was released of our bomber picking off Iraqis on the ground and laughing and making jokes about it, that was WikiLeaks. And all of the, every Democrat that hates Julian Assange today was cheering and giving his praises then. It's completely bullshit. But it just so happened that, you know, but just because of the way things turned out, man, he's going to get the short end of the stick, and it's probably going to be the end of him.
You know, I'm not so sure about that.
Well, that doesn't surprise me, but go ahead.
Well, I mean, I think, no, this is, you know, it's kind of, you know, on the same thing, but different. Regarding Julian Assange, I would be surprised if he were convicted in an American court of espionage. Like, maybe him being extradited to the United States might be one of the best things that happened to him. Because that way, I honestly don't think he fits any definition of a spy. I think that they're trying to charge him with espionage, and to me, he's clearly a journalist publishing material. And so, I think this might be one of the better things that happened to him. I mean, he probably wishes that's my take. I don't think a jury of actual people, you know, would convict him based on what they're trying to charge him with.
Well, I don't think you know exactly what they're charging him with.
Espionage.
More than that.
What else?
Well, I have a clip here. Let's listen to it.
Okay, cool.
Now to breaking news from London, where a court has ruled WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange can be extradited to the United States to face espionage and other charges. Remy Onasencio is outside the court that announced that decision a short time ago. Remy, good morning.
Nate, good morning to you. That's right. And it has been pretty crowded all morning here outside the British High Court. And that's because whatever Washington thinks of Julian Assange, he still has many supporters who say he exposed American wrongdoing in Afghanistan and Iraq. But today, British judges did rule in favor of the United States, opening the door to Assange's extradition. In total, he's facing 18 charges. That includes espionage, charges of conspiring to hack government computers and releasing confidential documents. And this really has been a chapter, a full year in the making. Today's decision actually runs counter to an earlier lower district court ruling that blocked Assange's extradition because of fears he would be sent to a supermax penitentiary in Florence, Colorado, and then potentially take his own life. You might.
What the fuck is that?
Wow. Didn't see that one happening.
We got to listen to that again. This is what they were afraid of.
To a supermax penitentiary in Florence, Colorado, and then potentially take his own life.
Potentially take his. They was worried that he was going to go to a supermax prison and potentially take his own life.
Yeah. Once again, fix is in.
It's definitely in.
You might remember Assange had also spent 7 years seeking asylum in the Ecuadorian embassy here in London before being hauled out in 2019 and subsequently arrested. All this to say is that this saga continues to go on and it's not over yet. And actually, Assange may not end up in the United States at all. That's because there are still several legal hurdles to come, including a further final appeal at the British Supreme Court.
You know, I don't know where I heard this, but it really stuck with me. And again, our journalists are just complete shit. How many years did they go on and on and on about, just talking about journal and, you know, like, Khashoggi getting assassinated.
Oh, Dimash Coach.
Yeah, getting assassinated. Yeah. We heard about him nonstop. It was, you'd think that it was the worst thing that's ever happened to journalism. But what we're witnessing right now, no one seems to give a fuck. It's just sad to me.
Yeah, you figure that there would be more outcry on the part of journalists, ABC, CBS, CNN, that they would all be like, hey, you know what? This could have easily been us publishing something the government didn't want published. But then you think to yourself, wait a minute, these guys are all bought. Of course they wouldn't be publishing something the government didn't want. I mean, of course they wouldn't be publishing something the government really doesn't want published.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
It does.
And so, that should be one of the maxims of our show.
Yeah, I think so.
Our media has failed us. And yeah. Because yeah, you would think that journalists and journalist groups, you know, left and right, anyone who saw themselves possibly publishing something that the government had a classification on in the future would have an interest in making sure that we don't set the precedent that, you know, when the government says don't publish it because it's a secret, that we don't just fold. So, yeah, I guess I did not think of this case as deeply. And before, I just thought, oh, man, this is really bad. This guy is getting shafted. But he's taking one for the team, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, I know I promised a lot. You know, I promised to end the show with some good news. So I have a sexual assault story here. But the good news is it didn't really happen.
Oh. How do you have a sexual assault story, but the sexual assault didn't really occur?
Well, it happened virtually.
Wait a minute. So we've witnessed the very first virtual sexual assault.
I don't know if it's the first, but it's going to be the most popular.
You always remember your first.
I didn't.
Let's start.
I wasn't following really. I mean, when Facebook came up with the whole Meta thing, I kind of stopped paying attention. But apparently they built some sort of a platform called Horizon World, which I guess is kind of like a Second Life or something, you know, a place where you can create an avatar and go virtually mingle with people. Certainly not a new idea. It's been around forever, but
I'd be interested in getting they talk about this metaverse like it was the very first time. And then I remember like years ago, Second Life. Do you think people would actually end up being, oh yeah, I'm going to be hanging out in the metaverse and meeting my friends in the metaverse? Do you think it'll come to that?
Like, 10 years ago, I would have said no, but today, yeah, I think it would probably be some sort of a thing. I don't think it's going to be popular. I don't think it's going to like overtake human interaction yet. But you know what? I mean, they're setting us up. I mean, they've already got the world conditioned to the idea of being on lockdown in your homes. What kind? You got to get some sort of interaction if you're not allowed to leave your house. So. And I know that, yeah, you know, that you might roll your eyes at that here in America, but that's happening in other places.
Australia, right?
Australia is just a horrible example. Australia and Austria. Even Canada is got like really bad. I don't know what it is right now, but even Canada has went through like really, really strict laws considering lockdown. So. And I don't think that that's going away anytime soon. So if you take that into account, I mean, if you step back and you look at all the pieces, I ought to try to do that sometime. Step back and look at all of the different seemingly non-related things that are going on in the world. And if step back far enough, maybe you can see how they're pieces in a puzzle. I don't know. That'd be interesting. But
we might have to take that up.
Yeah, we should. Facebook is off to a rough start with its virtual reality ambition. A week since its platform, Horizon World, was launched, users are already reporting cases of harassment and sexual assault. Already the word sexual assault has been dumbed down to mean practically nothing now, right?
Yeah, how could you have sexual assault when a person doesn't actually touch you?
Yeah. Not only was I groped last night, but there were other people there who supported this behavior, which made me feel isolated in the plaza, the user wrote in Facebook's official Horizon group.
I wonder what is it like grabbing a virtual boob?
I would think that it's very not satisfying.
Yeah, I would too. I'm sorry. Continue.
The user was reportedly groped by a stranger in the virtual landscape. In another instance, writer Parmi Olson, who tried out the VR experience, spoke of being surrounded by a group of male avatars who started taking pictures of her. It made her feel like a specimen. As of now, the metaverse realm has a tool called Safe Zone. It is a protective bubble built as a safety feature that can purportedly protect users when they feel threatened. Once the shields of Safe Zone go up, no one can touch, talk, or interact with the user in any way.
So what's the purpose again?
With the purpose of what?
Yeah, I mean, of being on the on Horizon, if you're wearing a safety shield where you can't be seen, talked, or... Yeah, I don't... Yeah, that doesn't make any... Yeah, that's just weird.
Joe. The world that we live in, man. These times, man. I came across that late. I had this next one here that I really wanted to get to. So you get two shenanigans stories this week. While the United States is trying to kill our beauty pageant industry by, you know,
putting men in it.
Yeah, you know, or banning the swimsuit things and just basically making it unwatchable. Because let's be honest, no one really wants to watch what 50 women just talk about their feelings and sing songs. We want to.
Nope, not at all. Do some flesh. Sorry, did I say that loud? I think I did.
We both did. But Saudi Arabia, not them. Camels enhanced with Botox barred from Saudi beauty contest. Saudi authorities have carried out their biggest crackdown on camel beauty contestants, disqualifying more than 40 enhanced camels from the annual pageant, according to the state-run Saudi press agency. The camels disqualified in the competition at the King Abdulaziz Camel Festival were judged to have received Botox injections and other artificial touch-ups. The popular festival, which started this month, invites the breeders of the most beautiful camels to compete for about $66 million in prize money. God damn. Botox injections, facelifts, and other cosmetic alterations to make the camels more attractive are strictly prohibited. Jurors decided the winner based on the shape of the animal's head, neck, humps, dress, and postures. So. Yeah.
Yeah, I filed this under why they don't deserve all that oil they got over there.
Yeah.
This is reason enough that, you know, we should take the oil and, yeah, have it, because you guys have beauty contest for camels.
And it almost writes a whole slew of jokes for itself.
Yeah.
You know? So
it's funny, when I first came across this article, I had to check and make sure that it wasn't from The Onion.
Absolutely.
I mean, there you have it. Like, hey, different folks, different strokes, right?
It'd be kind of like if we read a story about, farmers in Alabama holding a beauty contest for their sheep, you know,
or their pigs.
Yeah.
But like, this takes a horrifying turn, because I mean, on one level, there already is, you know, a beauty contest for, you know, pigs and, you know, farm animals. I call it 4-H. You know, they'll breed a pig or a cow, and they'll take it to the state fair. It'll win an award. That's to me, that's a beauty show for a pig or for livestock. But it takes a horrifying turn when they start, like, you know, Botoxing it. Yeah, like, who thinks of this stuff? I guess someone who wants to win $60 million.
Shit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sign me up.
Yeah. Yeah, $60 million would make you do a lot of things that you ordinarily wouldn't.
Well, Joe, on that note, I think that brings us to the end of tonight's show. So what's your plans? Are you coming home? Are you just going to stay there or what, man? You've been there a week, right?
I got here yesterday.
Oh, snap.
Yeah.
I thought you was leaving last weekend. So you just got there.
Yep.
Awesome.
Yeah. Like, I'll be here for another, like, you know, 12 days or something like that.
Dude.
And, like, today was my very first day, like, you know, getting up and walking out and just being out in the Bahamas.
That's awesome, man. That's great. I'm happy for you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, be happy for me, because soon you'll be living in Florida, and it'll be just like being in the Bahamas, just not similar weather. But
they poured the concrete slab, man.
Are you having any more pictures of it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
So, I'll throw a picture of my slab in the show notes, and if you send me some pictures this evening, I'll throw some of them in the show notes as well.
Cool.
Not the show notes, but on the website.
Wait. So do you own the slab?
I guess technically it is my slab.
Awesome.
Yeah. I'm kind of jazzed, man.
Once again, Brian excited. What's that all about?
Yeah, you should see my excited face. It looks like my regular face, but anyway. All right, folks, thanks for listening. And please join us here next week. where Joe and I will continue our never-ending quest, and it's getting to almost be near mission impossible, but we're going to keep trying to solve the world's problems a few drinks at a time. Take care, everybody.
Last week I left a note on Laura's desk. It said, "I love you," signed anonymous friend. Turns out she's smarter than I thought she was. She knows I wrote it, now the whole class does too. And I'm all alone during couples skate, when she skates by with some guy on her arm. But I know that I'll forget the look of pity in her face when I'm living in my solar dome on a platform in space. Cause it's gonna be the future soon, I won't always be this way. When the things that make me weak and strange get engineered away, it's gonna be the future soon. I've never seen it quite so clear. When my heart is breaking, I can close my eyes, it's already here. I'll probably be some kind of scientist, building inventions in my space lab in space. I'll end world hunger, I'll make dolphins speak, work through the daytime, spend my nights and weekends perfecting my warrior robot race, building them one laser gun at a time. I will do my best about life and what it's worth. I just hope that I can keep them from destroying the earth. Cause it's gonna be the future soon, I won't always be this way. When the things that make me weak and strange get engineered away, it's gonna be the future soon. I've never seen it quite so clear. When my heart is breaking, I can close my eyes, it's already. As I piece by piece replace myself, and the steel and circuits will make me whole. But I still feel so alone until Laura calls me home. I'll see her standing by the monorail. She'll look the same except for bionic eyes. She lost the real ones in the robot wars. I'll say I'm sorry, she'll say it's not your fault. Or is it? She'll eye me suspiciously, hearing the whir of the servos inside. She'll scream and try to run, but there's no way she can hide. When a crazy cyborg wants to make you his robot bride, well, it's gonna be the future soon, and I won't always be this way. When the things that make me weak and strange get engineered away, it's gonna be the future soon. I've never seen it quite so clear.